Hello, this is Josh Hankin from SandbagFitnessSystems.com, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Vince McConnell. Vince has been in the industry for 25 years, got his start training towards the goal of being a professional tennis player, and I'm sure that journey has taken him to a lot of interesting places within the industry. Currently, he runs his own training center and has very cool programs going from athletic performance to general fitness. He was just telling me how he is. His ages range from 8 to 82, and I think that's pretty outstanding. And it's great to talk to people that not only, you know the science, but the practical application of that science. And I've actually have heard of Vince for quite some time. He used to be, we were just talking about putting out a magazine, online magazine called Dolphine, and I used to be a big fan of that, and was a lot of great material on there. So, Vince, I'd really like to thank you for taking the time today. And I know that, you know, we're just talking about time is always a hard thing to get a hold of, but I really wanted to pick your brain because you've been sending me some really interesting material about your use of the sandbag, and I'd like to hear how that has integrated into your program. So welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Josh. Very much a privilege to have the opportunity to speak with you here.
Very cool. And if you could maybe first, I know I always ask people to sort of give a general outline of the general philosophy, and then we can talk about how sort of what we've been talking about specifically sort of fits into that. So, you know, can you describe to people, you know, how you sort of come about your philosophy, how someone who maybe would come to see you would start off?
My philosophy is has evolved over the years. As you mentioned, I've been in it for 25 years, which, you know, I would be pretty embarrassed about some of the stuff that I did even as recent as 5 years ago, and I think any strength coach that is worth their whatever would be able to say that. And so that being said, I've been very consistent in that I believe in training the athlete in the way that they, or the person in the way first for function and then for the cosmetic aspect second. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody that really only wants to lose 10 pounds, 20 pounds, you know, 50 pounds, and says, I really don't care if I can do anything. I just want to look like I can. Even then, I find a way to get them back into the function aspect first. And I'll tell you the main reason why, Josh, is because I do understand as well as you do that if you're not able to function, you're not going to be able to work out consistently. And so without being able to do anything consistently in the fitness realm, your results, number one, you're probably not going to get to where you want to be, and if you do, you're going to fall back quickly, and then the point of diminishing returns are going to come from your efforts because you're either A, going to get hurt, or you're just going to get completely turned off of exercise altogether because your repertoire is going to be limited ultimately to getting on a treadmill and watching soap operas or trying to watch the grass grow. So it's one of the things that I cross to a potential client first and foremost is that they're going to work hard, but it's going to be fun, and it's also going to be something that is constantly changing because the human body is constantly changing. Nothing about the human body is static. And that's one of the reasons I really took hold of the sandbags, and we'll get a little bit more into that as we go along specifically. But the sandbag, you know, really are the perfect tool that I've come across, or one of the perfect tools about being dynamic, and about every time you touch the sandbag, even if it's the same weight and you're doing the same exercise, there's something different about it every time. You can really just settle into a groove, and you don't get acclimated to it like you do with conventional forms of fitness exercise and body composition type exercise.
Well, I sort of chuckled to myself when you were first starting out about mentioning, you know, being embarrassed about some of the stuff you used to do. I think we all go through that period, and I like to think of it as an evolution rather than mistakes.
Yeah.
But how would you say that your philosophy has really changed shape in the last 5 years? Have you been doing anything dramatically different?
The most important thing is mobility. For the longest time, I really did my own training. And, you know, I'm very serious about my own training from the standpoint of leading by example. And I'd like to say that it might just be, you know, vanity, but it's really not because I do believe in getting in the trenches with the people that I train. And the mobility aspect of it, I have a background also in martial arts since I was a kid. And flexibility is one of the things that always came natural to me. And thus I said flexibility, not necessarily mobility. And so I was able to get away without doing a whole lot of stretching and a whole lot of the stuff that gets you into the fun stuff, the dynamic stuff, the strength conditioning, the metabolic work that was tough. It's still a little bit more fun than doing the mobility stuff. And just over the last 3 to 4 years especially, I have started with every client off with at least 10 minutes, sometimes with athletes, also 30 minutes on dynamic warm-up. I really don't like to call it warm-up because most people, when they hear warm-up, they immediately fall asleep. They immediately, okay, it's just a warm-up, and then we're going to get to what's important. I want them to understand the aspect. Preparation is to call it. I call it preparation or mobility preparation, AMP for short, and people can, you know, kind of memorize that. You know, AMP is getting you into the strength of your workout or the central nervous system part of your work. The mobility allows somebody to better perform in the stages of progression that they're looking towards, whether it's, you know, your one rep max or whether it's hypertrophy training. Say if I'm working with a bodybuilder, same thing. I used to never, ever touch mobility stuff with a bodybuilder because I didn't think it was relevant. I thought it was important to get right to the workload type stuff and then maybe throw in some stretching in between sets and all that because I knew that it was boring to the client and I didn't want to lose them. So I wanted to keep everything exciting. And so I might have them show up 5 minutes early, jump on a treadmill or a bike, and then get right to the stuff that matters. In the last 3 years, completely changed from that. I go right into the mobility stuff, and sometimes we'll spend enough time in the mobility work, Josh, that we don't even, on that given day, if somebody's having difficulty and some impairment in connective tissue, we won't even do the strength portion of the workout. We'll save it for the next time just because they're ready for it, and I can prevent an injury before it occurs that way.
Sure, and I think you hit on keynote. When you're speaking about mobility, it's different than when you're talking about just stretching. Can you talk a little bit about what the difference is between the two systems?
Mobility, and this is believe me, this is all just layman terms because I want to explain things to people instead of trying to show somebody. And I know you're very much like this too. Is that, you know, the information you give out is something that somebody can apply right when they hear it, as opposed to going, okay, let me go take a class and try to figure out how to decipher this. Mobility. Mobility, in its pure and simple terms, is dynamic movement through healthy range of motion. And so from the standpoint of if I'm doing an exercise, say a squat, and, you know, a typical squat that everybody's familiar with, say a back squat, bars on your back, if I do not have the thoracic mobility, for instance, that means your mid-back, right between your shoulder blades, I'm going to be able to get my arms back into external range of motion, my shoulder to external range of motion to hold onto the bar. So I'm leaving myself up to injury there. Or instead of the shoulders getting injured, I'm going to have to lean forward my lumbar spine to compensate in order to do the movement. And then even then, I'm not going to be able to get down as low as I need to have healthy range of motion for my knees and ankles. So all that taken into account, there's going to be an injury somewhere, somehow, without the proper range of motion or mobility that I can get into for that exercise. So mobility would be the ability to get your body into a healthy position to perform a given activity. And then especially with sports, you know, you take a tennis player, for instance, that's got to move side to side, front and back, and if they don't have mobility in their hip flexors, as an example, they're going to have some compensation somewhere where a hamstring or even a shoulder is going to be relegated to a lot of undue stress. And then you could name any sport imaginable, and it would apply to that. You know, in pitching and baseball, again, we go back to the thoracic mobility. That's why I personally am very tight. No matter how much I work at it, I got to do it every day. And that's something that's like flossing my teeth. I know, okay, got to get that foam roller out. I got to get tape the two tennis balls together like Mike Boyle teaches and put it, you know, behind my shoulder blades, do my thoracic extensions. I have to do that. That is a daily thing for me in order to maintain healthy range of motion in anything that I'm doing in the course of the day. So the mobility, again, the definition would be healthy movement as opposed to just being able to, you know, fall into a split, for instance, or being able to hold a stretch. The mobility is dynamic, at least in my definition. I try to simplify it that way as opposed to, you know, trying to get a little too extreme about it because people typically go, oh, I stretch all the time. I've got good flexibility. I can touch my toes. Well, just because you can touch your toes, that's not necessarily saying that a lot of good things are happening. There could be some bad things happening in spite of you being able to reach down and touch your toes, for instance.
I think that's really key and doesn't get emphasized enough, because it seems a lot of confusion upon how to move better, because I think in essence it's something that everyone sort of agrees to, but there's so many different methods about approaching it. And I think you hit a big one on the thoracic mobility right between people's shoulders. And, I have numerous people that complain that they should never lift overhead. It's like, well, the process of lifting overhead isn't bad, it's just that you don't move well enough to do it correctly. So really in essence you're saying, that's your base level, of your hierarchy of training, because you need to be able to move well to perform these exercises, right? I mean, in essence.
Absolutely. And again, before I do anything with a client, say if I have a client that comes in for the first time, the first thing that we're going to do after sitting down and going through an entire assessment of their health and so forth, everything, the basic thing that every trainer should do to begin with, we go over mobility. I mean, I take them through a version of a functional movement screen. I kind of really improvise a little bit with it, because I believe that there's some things that might not, Greg Cook does a tremendous job with that, no doubt about it, and then it's a good standalone. But if you've been in the game as long as, say, you and I have, there's certain things that we can pick up on and go, okay, hey, I believe I need to take it a step further, just because, not just to be different, but because we need to see a little bit more. And I like to call it, when we're locating those weak links, that we're In a way, we're kind of diagnosing what the problem is, the impairment, and then we're also, I call it, revealing and resolve. In other words, we're revealing something, and then we're also able to resolve the issue. When, for instance, say if somebody an overhead squat's a great example. You take somebody, nothing in their hands, take their arms overhead, and ask them to go into a full squat position. I would say, I don't like percentages, but let's throw one out there. Let's say, 7 out of 10 people can't do that without their heels coming off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then you could find any number of things that are the problem there. It could be ankle mobility. More times than not, it's the thoracic spine that suffers in that situation. And then they have learned to do things incorrectly because of that weak link. When they pick something off the ground, see a potted plant, they pick it up with a rounded back, and then they complain that the back hurts. And the first thing that they'll say is, when they come in to work with me, they'll say, I got to strengthen my back. And I've got to convince them, your back's not weak, but it's actually being called on to do something it's not intended to do. The back is a stabilizer primarily. Yes, you can strengthen it to a degree, but that's not really the problem here. The problem is your glutes aren't firing off. The problem is your thoracic spine is a mess, and you're rounding your shoulders. You're shrugging your shoulders up when you lift. Your rotator cuff is being put into a slack position. So there are all kind of things going on. If we can go back to the basics and teach you how to lift off the floor by driving your feet through the floor and by activating your glutes, getting those lazy glute muscles to activate, and that's a whole nother topic. And if I'm jumping around too much, bring me back to where I was, but I want to touch on the glutes there for a second, Josh. The glute muscles are probably the strongest muscles in our body, potential-wise, to be able to move heavy loads. Any power lifter, anybody that's strong in their lower body, at some point is going to have to get those glutes really to fire off. Now, there's an argument that, I read something recently where somebody didn't have any glute muscles and they were squatting over 400 pounds or whatever. But let's just say, and all things being equal, the glute muscles are going to potentially be the strongest muscles in your body. That being said, they're also the laziest in your body. They're very hesitant to want to get in on the action unless they are activated and called on. I liken it to the big guys that work in the warehouse, the guys that are capable of moving the forklifts, not just riding it, and they sit over there with their arms folded and eating donuts and drinking coffee all day, and they make the little wiry guys that just got hired do all the heavy lifting and everything, and they're really not capable of doing as much heavy lifting as the bigger guys are. But because the bigger guys are lazy, they call on the smaller guys to do it. Then when we do call on the big guys to do some of the heavy lifting, because they're so out of condition, then they fail. So it's, again, one of those things where the glute muscles are the big, strong guys in our body. However, because they don't learn to activate, we've got to teach those guys to activate. When they don't activate, then undue stress gets placed on our lumbar spine as well as our shoulders and other peripheral areas. I mean, I've had, people even injure Achilles tendon and, trying to lift something off the ground, and ultimately it's like, okay, your glutes aren't firing.
And I think, you know, you were talking about earlier how, well, okay, someone can still lift a massive amount of weight in anecdotal evidence, but the problem is that you can allow your body to do lots of stuff that maybe isn't good for it, and you may not have the injury at the time, but, you know, it's more of a matter of when, not if, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
And so, I mean, you know, that's a pretty important thing, because especially people that are working in offices most of the day, or, you know, environments where they don't get to be pretty active, how common is it to see their glute system fire correctly?
Oh, it's super common. I mean, that's why, again, when it comes down to the preparation before a workout, one of the first two areas that I emphasize the most on that individual you just mentioned, that's, you know, like most of the people that are going to be listening, most of the people that you and I deal with on a daily basis, is the thoracic spine and the glutes. The thoracic spine is going to get lazy. It's going to, you know, it feels good to have bad posture. That's one of the things. That's one of the things that really is kind of counterintuitive, is that, or ironic, if you will, is that it almost feels good to slouch. It feels good to have your cell phone up to your ear and then at the time not realize that you're in a horrible, horrible, destructive position in something as simple as putting your cell phone up to your ear, or sitting at your office, you know, working. You don't feel the disorder at the time. It's one of those things that it's not like, oh man, this hurts, I'm not going to do this anymore. It actually really doesn't hurt to be in bad posture at that time. It's when you move out of the bad posture, because you're going to eventually have to, that starts to bark at you. And then you go, why? What happened? It hurts to move, so now I'm just going to not move anymore. And that's when, again, it's a cycle that people get into. They start to, and it gets back to the mobility thing, when it hurts to move, Josh, people stop moving. And then the less you move, the more it becomes difficult to move. And it's one of those things that gets right back to, why is mobility more important than strength training? It's not really more important. It's just that it needs to be there for strength training. And I'm a big strength training advocate. If you were to ask, you know, the majority of my clients, they'd say, hey, that's what he's all about primarily. But then if somebody said, what about the mobility? Oh, yeah, well, the mobility. But we do the mobility to get into the strength training. So it's like the mobility is something that's absolutely essential so that we can get to the things that ultimately change our body. And it gets back to, you know, well, I don't really want to do all that stuff, you know, Coach Vince, I want to get to the workout. And I'm like, okay, that's fine and well. But if you're not able to get to the workout, how much progress have you made? If you're able to be consistent for the next year and then you got to stop working out altogether, have you really made any progress? You know, I mean, it's like, it's just one of those things where you got to count the cost of the decisions that you make going into a training program. You got to set it out in front and go, okay, is there anything missing here? Because if there is, there is going to be the leak in my boat that's going to cause it to sink. So we've got the things that we can control, which are whether we put mobility into our program or not, whether we put nervous system training into our program, whether we put energy system training into our program, and certainly strength training, whether we put those things in there or not, we're going to either benefit or be liable to it. And it's just like when, you know, you have women that come in and go, I just want to do the mobility and I want to do cardio. I don't want to do that strength stuff. And it's kind of the same thing. It's like, okay, you know, if you're going to work with me, you're going to do the strength stuff. It's because I would be lying to you if I had you leave that part out. So it's funny how people like to kind of, it's like going up to a buffet and they go, okay, I'll take one of those. Let's skip that. And I'll take the, and it's like, you know, it wouldn't it be nice if it was like that? But, you know, the thing is that, yeah, to differing degrees, put those components in there, but they all need to be in there in some way. They all need to be taken care of. You've got to be responsible or accountable to each one of those components in a training regimen.
And, you know, that seems, you know, to be a way to go about it. But, you know, I know a lot of people when they start off, and, you know, you and I deal with these people all the time, they barely have enough motivation to sort of just get to the gym or start working out. How do you sort of sell this to people, or how do you sort of tell them to start incorporating it so it doesn't seem so overwhelming?
First of all, you have to, again, you got to sell the thing about your body is something that you, in this lifetime, you don't ever get to take a vacation from it. In other words, wherever you go, it's going. And whatever you do, it's going to do it with you. And so, you know, somebody can, you know, get in a little bit of denial and say, you know, well, I don't, you know, I don't get into all that workout stuff, or my doctor told me I need to work out. And the thing is that, you know, this is a very, you know, timely thing for me. A very close, actually my father, I was going to say a close relative, just got diagnosed with cancer. He's a former football player, played Division I football, never in his adult life wanted to work out, you know, anything close to it. And then he sends me an email today saying that he's been to the to where he went to get everything checked out and all that. And he said, first thing they told him, get on a nutrition and progressive exercise program. He said, first thing, for the first time in my lifetime at 43 years old that I've had my dad email me and tell me he needs to start an exercise program is after he found out that he had cancer. Now,
wow.
That's extreme, but it's exactly what I try to get across to people, is that movement is health. Without movement, you slowly die. It's a slow death. I believe it was Steve Maxwell that said death begins in the pelvis.
Yeah.
And I believe what he was basically saying is that, you know, when we stop moving our pelvis as we get older, and then we become self-conscious and we don't want to do initiate from our pelvis. And when we stop moving our pelvis, everything starts to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about internal organ-wise, too. And I believe there's a lot of truth to that. I believe there's getting back to how do I draw the person in? It's not, certainly not from a business perspective. Am I really speaking to them? I'm really, you know, because if you sell them on them, then, you know, the thing about them being client, it's not just, you know, taking the, you know, the Pilates class or taking the this class or doing the, you know, the new whatever it is of the day about the, you know, exercise classes, the boot camps and all that's great and fun. And if you do it for fun, keep doing it for fun. The thing is you really need to understand at some point, you need to be honest with yourself and say, I'm doing this for my life. I'm doing this to enhance my life because it's everybody else is doing it. You know, something to tell everybody I'm taking part in. For vanity's sake, you know, for the way that we look. I mean, you and I, you know, we're honest with ourselves. We like to work out, and because it does make us look better than if we didn't. I mean, it's anybody that says that's not the case that I really would like to see an evaluation on, because that is part of it, and that's part of the good thing about it. Now, you both know also that can't be the only reason we do what we do, because that's so fleeting. On a given day, our body is going to change. Here or there, I mean, you know, we can hold a little bit more water one day and go, hey, man, what happened? I was looking good yesterday, and now I look like, you know, just shot me full of helium. What's wrong here? You know, and that's the thing, is that it just be about that, but it's definitely something good to get somebody interested and get somebody staying consistent with it. Because if they do, Josh, stay consistent. When people are consistent, they will experience the results. If not, a matter if, it's just when they start seeing the real benefit that they do. And then as far as telling somebody how long it's going to take them, we can't ever come up with a certain time. I mean, I would love to have a program that I could put 20 people on and then have them all start at, you know, the same place and everything, and say, you guys eat the same exact thing, you do the same workout, you're all going to, you know, put the same amount of on, you're all gonna, it just doesn't happen. There are too many variables that are put in place in that. It people's past, their mindset when they're going into what they're doing, the stress level in their life, all those things factor into the exact result somebody gets. That being said, I can promise them and guarantee them this, they're gonna be better off with training on that program than if they weren't. I mean, that's one thing that you and I can always promise somebody is, you know, hey, if you purchase a sandbag and you use this on a consistent basis, I mean, with even the most basic routine, you will get positive, impactful benefits to your health, to your wellness, to your overall mindset. You will. I mean, it's one of those things that it's just whatever we stay consistent with and we put our energy and our mind and body into while we're doing it is definitely a healing in motion thing going on.
And with that, you know, I think that's, you know, really powerful stuff, especially, you know, the thought, you know, it's hard sometimes for people to see the long term. You know, we're very much immediate gratification society, like you mentioned. You know, we want to look better. And like you said, I don't think I care who you are. Of course, that's a factor in a motivation of some sort. So, you know, along with that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, sometimes people can misassume that, you know, when you're talking like this, that you're not into weight training, you're not into exercise, you're just into this mobility. But, you know, anyone who's actually, you know, seen some of the stuff you do online knows you're incredibly fit. So what's your sort of scheme? You know, once you get someone moving kind of well, where does the exercise program start to, you know, progress from there?
The most important thing from there is to get the muscles that the primary – I find out where there's a weak link. In other words, I'll have the client perform some basic exercises. You know, for instance, I really like a suspended row to start out with because it's showing me a lot of things about if they're able to keep their body in proper alignment. You know, is their scapula winging out, or is it, you know, are they able to keep their shoulders down when they're doing a row? Then I like series of push-ups. We typically start on a power rack, and I'll start with the bar a little bit higher up and have them keep their body because we're working in a plank position there too, as opposed to, I don't like machines. I'll just tell you that right now. It's one of the things that it's one of the easiest ways to fool a strength coach or a personal trainer is to put a client on a machine. And then because you really can just, all kinds of bad things can be happening, and you might not know it for too long until something really not good happens. Either they get injured or they're certainly not going to be making kind of progress that they need to be making from a functional standpoint. So I like body weight exercises, Josh, to start with, to be able to see proper alignment. And that's kind of an extension of the mobility thing, but I'm starting to get more into strength now. I emphasize a lot of unilateral single leg exercises to start with. I need to find out if there's any compensations going on there in the way that the pelvis rotates. I need to also see if there's any significant imbalance. Everybody's going to have a little bit of imbalance one way or the other. They're going to have one side more dominant than the other. But I need to see if it's so glaring that it's an issue that I definitely need to make sure that we're doing nothing but single leg stuff to start out with until we get that resolved. Then we can start getting into some bilateral movements. I like to teach the kettlebell swing to start out with. And it's not because it's a kettlebell. It's just I like the movement from its from its simplicity. As long as we teach the hip fold and not to let them round their back, start really light, you know, so that they're getting used to the folding from the hips and then full extension up at the top, because it's teaching them to use their posterior chain, which most people they're not even familiar with, much less proficient in, is to be able to get the posterior chain to activate when they're doing anything, any type of lower body exercise. They almost always will go into the ball of their foot. Their heel will come flying up off the ground. And then they complain about knee problems as well as lower back problems. And, you know, I both know, okay, that's pretty easy to see why that is. You know, just about everybody that's ever had knee problems, the first day that we work, they come in, I go, okay, here, do a sit down in this chair and then get up, you know, and you tell real quick, you know, that there's the problem. And then from there, we start introducing some loading. Again, I like to focus first and foremost, after we do the suspended row, I like to do some unilateral standing rows. I like to do with a simple pulley. In a lot of cases, I'll use resistance bands for that, just to be able to see, again, the posture, to see their alignment and their spine, and also to see the unilateral strength that we're developing from there. I'm not a big sit-up fan. I have some clients that go, all I want to do is work abs. You know, they come in and, you know, they learn real quick that I do very little in the way of direct abdominal work. I mean, it's, you know, the abdominals really are a bridge more than, and no pun intended there. They really are more just something that connects more than they are like, okay, I'm going to isolate my abs, you know, and I'm speaking as a guy that used to give a 30-minute abdominal class. So this is back about 15 years ago. But the thing is that I understand the attraction to feeling the burn. You know, I understand that. But, you know, and I love what you do with the sandbags because it's all about integration. And you're like, hey, look, you know, you can do an overhead press with a sandbag, you know, a simple overhead press with a sandbag, you know, grabbing it out wide like that. And if your abdominal muscles are not activating, then, you know, you've got limited time here on earth. I mean, because they will be screaming and barking and yelling at you and in a very positive way and in a functional way. And thing is that most of my clients, when they first start doing something like that, or, you know, a kettlebell windmill, or they'll go, I've never been more sore in my midsection. I go, we did 5 reps. How can you be sore? How can you be sore? And they're like, well, you know, okay, now I get it. Now I get why we're not doing, you know, crunches and all the other stuff that everybody in those crunch machines. I mean, I've got a facility where I've got a bunch of machines in there that I bought a long time ago, and I got rid of a lot of the stuff. And somebody comes in, where's your crunch machine? I go, you know, I'm just going to put a sign up that there will never be a crunch machine anywhere within, you know, 1 mile radius of me. And then we can, you know, just solve that all together once and for all, and instead of having to explain to people that it really isn't something that's doing what they are thinking that it's doing. You know, from there, you're talking about, I mean, what we start loading the drills, you know, from a strength standpoint. I don't get a lot into the nervous system stuff early on. When I say nervous system, I'm talking about power and explosiveness. I'm not the biggest fan of Olympic lifts for novices. I love them for people that have been taught the right way, and I love them in my own training. It's one of the things that but it's a skill. I don't like to see them in high school weight rooms taught by football coaches. I'd rather see a whole line of kettlebells and sandbags in there of what these guys using that, as opposed to an improperly done Olympic lift. And I know you've got, you know, all that in your background too, and you correct me if you don't believe me in this, but an incorrect Olympic lift is, or not doing an Olympic lift is a lot better than doing one even a little bit incorrectly.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm talking about loaded. If somebody's learning to do it, obviously with a bar, there's going to be a process of learning to do it. So yeah, it's going to be done incorrectly initially. But when you see kids putting, you know, 225 on the bar and trying to do a hang clean, they don't even take it from the floor. They can't even take it from the floor, but then they want to pull it off of a rack and try to do some kind of really bad looking reverse curl, and you see them, you know, almost kill themselves. I mean, just I've seen some really bad stuff, not under my guidance, but I've seen and I've heard reports from athletes that I work with coming back and telling me and going, hey, man, he did this stuff in the weight room. And I'm like, man, this is like, you know, America's Funniest Video or something. It's not even funny, because you can really do some serious damage to a young athlete with this, and it's – you know, so I don't get into that initially. When I'm working with athletes that I'm going to the level, Josh, as an example, you know, say the football players I'm working with now, even if the Olympic lift, I don't really think that they need, I'm going to jump to do it properly, because I know that they're going to have to do it at some point. So I'd rather them learn how to do it correctly and me work with them in that, so that they learn to do it. But even then, we keep the reps really low, obviously. I'm not a, you know, you certainly fatigue when you're doing central nervous system work. Another thing that people, if you conditioning and central nervous system, explosiveness, you know, type stuff. And I'm like, you know, two different things. You really need to make sure you're, you know, differentiating those things and putting them in different aspects of the workout. Because if you start trying to intertwine, have somebody over there with their, you know, even their 5 rep max trying to do a power clean in the middle of a metabolic workout, it's like, you know, you really are doing a great disservice to that person, and you don't want to even teach, because bad form is going to follow. Fatigue promotes bad form. That's why we always want to regulate fatigue when we're doing the explosive work and the CNS stuff. You know, the strength stuff is the second part that I do with the athlete or with the client. If I'm not doing the central nervous system work, I like to get into some simple jumps, even with the 80, we'll do some nervous system. I wanted to get to where I want to have the ability to do, you know, at least to be healthy, to be able to keep his nervous system sharp. So we do some simple little jumps and bounding. We do some plyometric stuff with medicine balls and so forth. And then after the strength part of it, we get into the metabolic work. The metabolic work is going to be the amount of intensity is going to determine how long the actual session is. And, you know, and that's the thing, and, you know, basically working where we're looking for the EPOC, the exercise, oxygen consumption from the standpoint of the after effect more than we are burn calories during the workout. In other words, it's not a, you know, 45-minute session on full. It's, in many cases, 8 minutes, maybe 10, 12, 16 is probably the highest I go with anybody when it comes in, and that's at a really high level. And with the energy systems work, and by the time they get to that, if it's all included in the same workout, they're pretty much spent anyway. And then we finish up with some stretching. I really like bands for stretching hamstrings especially, and because I believe it gets into that ischial tuberosity, which is up at the top part of the hamstring, where I believe most, especially strength athletes or speed athletes, they have the greatest potential to hurt a hamstring is up at the top part of the hamstring. If somebody can picture right where it inserts into the glute muscles, not so much right behind the knee. I mean, you can hyperextend your knee and have some issues there, but I found that it's mostly going to be right up at the top of the hamstring, and that's also what contributes to some dysfunction in the pelvis as well as the lumbar taking a lot of undue stress. And then and that a lot of that's because the glute's not firing off properly. It gets right back to what we were talking about a little while ago. You know, the relationship between the glute firing off and then in that hamstring, the upper part of the hamstring, as well as the hip flexor on that side, not being as pliable as it needs to be. That's something that it all kind of, it's like a little conglomerate of issues that seem, in my experience, to kind of work together. Somebody's really tight in that hip flexor, they're going to have trouble getting that glute to fire off, or, you know, it's like, is it the chicken or the egg thing? What comes first? Is it the glute not firing off that causes the hip flexor to be, you know, chronically tight, or is it the chronically tight hip flexor is causing the glute not to fire off, and then that upper part of the hamstring significantly suffers from that. And so we, the resistance band allows us to work against resistance. I like to use the image of the resistance band being kind of like some external connective tissue that's assisting you to be able to lock that position out without the potential of overdoing it as far as the stretch goes. You know, and other than that, I mean, we do some other stretching for the areas of focus on the calves, Achilles tendon area, the hamstrings. Like, go in three different positions there, straight up, and then we go medial and then lateral, and then for the external rotators and the piriformis, really, really an important area to stretch, and then of course the hip flexors and the quadricep.
Wow, yeah, I mean that's. That shows you really, you know, a well thought out program versus I think a lot of people have fallen into the trap of just sort of going along with random workouts. And you mentioned the metabolic training. I think a lot of people have, obviously you've probably seen this, have really become infatuated with that aspect. I mean, do you think, you know, that people are sort of jumping, you know, the gun a little bit and getting too much into this metabolic training and missing some of the other components you mentioned? Or, you know, how would you recommend someone who's sort of training on their own or in group settings to sort of organize all that? Hello? Hello? Eventually there?
Yeah, where did I lose you?
Sorry about that. I was asking you, I said you know, you mentioned a lot, and I said that's the showing of a really well-organized program with a lot of purpose. And, you know, there's a lot of people right now, I think, that are doing a lot of random workouts without a lot of purpose behind them and, you know, are getting really caught up in the whole metabolic side of training. Do you think that's a mistake that you're seeing more and more of, at least as far as what you're reading and seeing out there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we create a lot of imbalances there if we just throw somebody into metabolic work without dealing with the mobility and the strength component with that. And also, the most important thing that I get across to other trainers when I do have the opportunity to work with them is that you really do need to understand that when it comes down to technique, you got to think mechanics instead of just, well, they're using good technique. You got to get into the mechanical part of it, and fatigue is going to prevent proper mechanics, and fatigue is also when the foundational mechanics are not there. You can't teach somebody good mechanics in the environment of fatigue. So what you need to make sure that we do is to get the mechanics down first and foremost. And then some good things happen because you're able to get more work done in the metabolic workout that way because your biomechanics are sound. So you're able, and it makes sense, you're able to, you know, things line up the way that they should so you can actually produce more work. And then also you're reinforcing good technique to the point where it becomes second nature to you. You're not having to sit and think about, you know, and right in line with the sandbags. I mean, you teach proper mechanics with the sandbag from the get-go, then, you know, when you're wanting to quit, you don't all of a sudden start compromising in a way that you do get hurt. And it doesn't have to be just sandbags. It's anything. Kettlebell training is a good example of that. I mean, kettlebell training has been used for metabolic work, you know, and all the CrossFit stuff and everything, and it's all great. But, you know, you really need to look at it from the standpoint of, okay, what is the cost of, you know, when I'm in an overly fatigued state where I'm ready to quit and then I'm still going to try to crank out another set of snatches, is that really, am I pushing roulette ultimately with a lot of things in my body when I do that? Whereas I'm better off if I, you know, keep the metabolic stuff in a rhythmic way where I hammer out the mechanics first and foremost. When I start to sense breakdown in the mechanics, I need to go to a different exercise. And that's what I also do when I'm working with my athletes and I can sense on a given day that they're fatigued even more than they normally would be. And say if my program I'm looking at and I go, okay, well, I've got, you know, and as an example, kettlebell snatches in the program today. You know, part of a, you know, not the best thing for Tabatas or anything, but, you know, it's in the program for metabolic work. And I notice that they're laboring. We'll throw those out and we'll just go to a high pull or a swing. I mean, you know, if we're going to stick with the kettlebell. Some cases I just throw the kettlebell thing out altogether and we focus on something else. I mean, it's real important to be attentive to that, not let the excitement of the metabolic work start, you know, governing every decision that you make in things. I mean, you got to pay attention if a client is laboring, you know, you really need to say, okay, look, let's just keep some work going here. Let's rest if you need to, but let's also keep some good mechanical work going, even if it means just doing some body weight squats. You know, just take your arms out in front of you when you squat down, come back up. You know, you're making progress that way.
Definitely really well said. And I know you only have a couple minutes left, and you got to run back to your real job working with people. So I want to first thank you again for your time, but I also wanted to sort of just tap into quickly, you know, the sandbags, because you were emailing me with some really interesting ideas and sort of, analyzation of the sandbag in use. So I'd like you to just talk briefly about how you've implemented them and what you've noticed and what you've sort of found with them, because I know it's one thing coming from me, but it's another coming from a good coach.
Well, the thing about sandbags is that, number one, I am a type A skeptic when it comes to anything, because I've tried just about everything that's come out at some point in time, and I don't say that to make it seem like I'm anybody special. Anybody that knows me will say, you know, his hobby and his work and his pretty much, I've got a wife and four kids, but at the same time, you know, I love what I do, and I'm always looking for ways, not necessarily to reinvent the wheel, but to help the wheel turn a little more efficiently and to keep things fun. The sandbags really caught my attention because of their the way that, like I mentioned earlier, every time you pick the bag up, it feels a little bit different. It doesn't have to be a different weight. It doesn't have to be a different exercise. It's just that it never really get into a groove with it. And then by being in the area that I'm in, where I work with a lot of guys that grew up on farms that had to, you know, throw around bags of fertilizer and feed and everything, and I know how strong those guys are. It intrigued me. I was like, wait a minute, okay, I believe this guy Josh Hinkin is onto something here, because, you know, but it's something I've never really tried, other than maybe just, you know, kind of dabbled in it at some point way back, but I never really got into a regimen of using the sandbags. So what I've found, and I've had them for, but I believe it's about 3 weeks now, mm-hmm. and I've started putting them in my own training program first, and then and just like I do with everything, the thing about the sandbag is that you can use a significantly less resistance than you think you can handle. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that the weight pulls down from the bag, the center of gravity of the bag, you know, pulls down, it
is actually great for having to change direction, which is what athletics, for the most part, is about. It's that dead weight. So, for instance, if I'm doing an exercise like a clean with the bag as opposed to a barbell, it's night and day what the thing feels like. I mean, it's just what your abdominal muscles are engaged and your midsection muscles engaged in an entirely different way than you would ever imagine anything else. Kettlebell, I've gotten pretty proficient at kettlebell training, and I remember how tough it was at first. The toughest part about kettlebell training for me was banging my wrist up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, but yet at the same time, I got where I could handle the kettlebells fairly. This is a whole different animal. You know, when I'm going with the sandbags and doing, you know, the variety of exercise, the best exercise I've done so far is the half moon snatch. I about coughed up a lung the other day doing it, and it was one of those things where I stay fit. So it was, okay, let's see if this thing's for real. And that right there, from the standpoint of the rotational component that you get, when you're coming up and around and you come to a dead stop and then come back and swing it around, you can't really get into a groove with the exercise. It gets more demanding rep to rep to rep to rep, even though it's a good feeling movement. It's one of the things where you really feel what you're accomplishing. You can feel it then. You don't wait 6 months down the road and go, hey, man, I've improved my golf swing. You know, I can kind of, you know, I'm getting my hips, you know, to get more into the, you know, this is, it's immediate. And then for mixed martial arts, you know, for Muay Thai or anything, you know, where you're throwing kicks, the sandbags are absolutely an essential thing, I would say. And I work with a lot of martial arts, and it's definitely a mainstay. And it's right now, it's the number one piece of equipment that I've got, and I'd be embarrassed to tell you how much money I've got in my place. So
that means a lot coming from you, though. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, unfortunately my view gets, I guess, considered skewed, but, you know, it's really the same reason, and I really appreciate hearing that type of stuff. It's really encouraging.
And, you know, and I'll keep you up to date on some of it because I've just scratched the surface with the sandbags. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's the thing is that I'm excited about them just with the few basic exercises that we've done. And, you know, but beyond that, and I was really looking to see if they were as difficult on the guys that I've been working out with, I've been training the football players that have been cleaning a significant amount of weight that were really, these are guys that are very strong in, you know, the grand scheme of things. And I was really curious to know what the 80-pound sandbag was going to do. I was kind of like, okay, this is maybe they're just tough on this 43-year-old guy, but let's see. And when I start seeing these 18-year-olds start looking at me and going, God, you know, man, what's up with this? You know, and I'm like, okay, all right, now this is for real. This is good. And I'm going to have some video up on my new website when it gets up on, it's McConnellTraining.com. And then I'll have on my my YouTube, I'll have some a bunch of clips up, you know, certainly using the sandbag. So anybody wants to see it in action, they'll definitely be able to get a good taste of it by viewing it that way.
That's awesome. And, you know, I don't want to keep it too long because I know you got to get back to work. So I want to take a moment to thank you again, Vince. And for people who want to check out more about what you're doing, your website's going to be out very soon, right?
Correct. Correct. Hopefully within the next week. Yeah.
Awesome. And it's McConnellTrain.com, and that's McConnell.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And you're going to have video. And if people want to check out more, I know you do have stuff currently on YouTube. If they search you, they'll be able to find it. Is there any other way for people to sort of find out maybe some of the stuff that you've written in the past or anything like that?
I don't know what happened to all the Dolph Scene stuff. I've got over 100 articles that are somewhere in cyberspace. You know, I'm gonna have all that up on my new website though. So if everybody can just be patient for just a little while,
sure.
You know, it'll get up, and I'll have all that, and I'll have some new stuff on there too. Because like I said, there's some of the stuff I wrote, you know, 8 years ago that I don't even know if I want it up there. Maybe it's a good thing.
I know they're feeling very well. So Vince, thank you so much. I really encourage people to check out your stuff, McConnellTrain.com. It's very hard to find coaches that, you know, are in the trenches giving out good information too. So awesome information, and definitely look forward to seeing more of your adventures with the sandbag.
Thank you, Josh. It's a privilege, and thank you for all the work that you're doing too. And you're an inspiration to, you know, all the strength coaches, and I appreciate the you know, the efforts that you put in. And it's good to be part of a brotherhood, you know, when we're giving out this information to everybody, and hopefully they can sense in us the sincerity and the way that we're in there with them. I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, we're not wearing the white coats and carrying the clipboards and pointing them where to go. We're actually leading them where to go, and that's the fun thing. That's the thing that keeps us excited.
Well, awesome. Greatly appreciated. So this is Vince McConnell from McConnellTraining.com and Josh Shankin from SandbackFitnessSystems.com. Vince, I look forward to talking to you soon.
Absolutely, Josh. Look forward to it.
Thank you.